യോഗേന ചിത്തസ്യ പദേന വാചാം മലം ശരീരസ്യ ച വൈദ്യകേന യോപാകരോത്തം പ്രവരം മുനീനാം പതഞ്ജലിം പ്രാഞ്ജലിരാനതോസ്മി സ്തുവേ പതഞ്ജലിം വ്യാസം ശങ്കരം ച മുനിത്രയം കർത്തൃസൂത്രസ്യ ഭാഷ്യസ്യ ക്രമാ വിവരണസ്യ ച. So we were discussing this 44th sutra of Sadhanapada, that is Swadhyaya Ishtadevata Samprayogaha. She already mentioned here. So Swadhyaya can be interpreted in so many different ways. In a general way, feeding our mind with healthy spiritual food, spiritual ideas by reading scriptures, holy books, which will have an elevating effect on the mind. That is the general interpretation. But in a specific way, we can see repeating a particular mantra with great concentration. Because when we repeat a mantra, there is a gradual process of our identification with the essence of that mantra. So it is generally interpreted in four different ways. Para, Pashyanti, Madhyama, Vaikari. These are the four dimensions of a holy word. Whether we repeat or whether we hear. The first and the grossest dimension of a word, of a holy word, is what we hear with our ears. So it is audible, clearly audible. It's called vaikari. That's the grossest dimension of a holy word, of a mantra, or an idea that is presented in the form of a word. Then as we contemplate on the meaning of that word, we reach a higher identification with the essence, with the implication of that word. It's called Madhyama. Then, still at a higher level, we reach Pashyanti, we enter into a direct communion with that word in our mental system. So there's a, because gradually it becomes less and less audible and more subtle. And para is the highest. At that level, we may not utter it, we may not hear it, because often when we repeat a mantra or a sacred sound, or a sacred word, we hear ourselves repeating it. That's at the grossest level. That hearing is very important for a beginner. For those who have reached a very high level of spiritual progress, that word, the essence of the word, has become a matter of experience for the spiritual seeker. It is called para. So in a descending order, it is called para, Pashyanti, Madhyama, Vaikari. Here, Swadhyaya Ishtadevata Samprayogaha. So when we go on repeating a sacred mantra, first, at the grossest level, that mantra creates healthy and spiritually helpful vrittis and vibrations in our mind, and these healthy vibrations and thought currents will eliminate unhealthy, undesirable vibrations. We can see when you try to meditate, or even when you try to think or contemplate for some time. If you try to contemplate on a higher idea, then you find suddenly there is an emergence of undesirable, unhealthy, unpleasant, unwelcome ideas intruded into the mind. Otherwise, it doesn't happen. If you are looking at the sky or the mountains and valleys, this doesn't happen. But if you sit in a quiet, solitary place and close your eyes, and then suddenly you find mind creates its own world. Because when you try to confront the problem of silence, then the suppressed ideas come to the conscious level. This can be countered and eliminated by reading a good book, by reciting a hymn, a devotional hymn, or by repeating some sacred sound like Om or prayer, any prayer in any tradition, any religious spiritual tradition. And this is the beginning. And as you evolve further and further in an ascending order from vaikari, that is from the grossest level, you reach madhyama, then pasyanti, then at least para, means highest level. So the sutra says, repetition of a holy sound and mantra will help you to gain communion with the chosen deity. That is highest, that's a para level. So when you meditate on God, first you may begin with loud prayer. Or there are some prayer meetings very, very, very violent sometimes, and a lot of noise, big drums, cymbals are beating. In a way, it is good because it drives away all other unnecessary sound systems, equally violent. But it's the beginning. At the highest level, when you reach a very high level of spiritual progress, the mind automatically identifies itself with the essence of the particular mantra or prayer or a hymn. So that's a goal. At that time, you can have direct communion with the chosen deity whose sacred mantra or word you are repeating. This is true in prayers, hymns, and so on. We already discussed this to some extent. That's why, Vyasa makes a statement. Devaha rishayaha siddhascha swadhyaya shilasya darshanam gacchanti karecha asya vartante iti. So the chosen deities, those to whom you are praying, whose sacred word or mantra you are repeating with great devotion and great sraddha, with great earnestness, those chosen spiritual icons or idea or personalities will give you physical communion. Means you will be able to see them with your own eyes. That's what you mean. Maybe you will be able to, maybe not with the same eye, but a mental level, at a higher level, you will be able to feel the experience of God himself in front of you through this process of swadhyaya. So this is the highest level. At the ordinary level, you can swadhyaya also means study of holy scriptures. Mean giving a spiritual orientation to a natural habit of reading books, acquiring ideas. We acquire many ideas, we read many books. Many of the ideas are not necessarily very helpful. Many books are not very helpful. So this habit of reading can be given a spiritual orientation so that it becomes a great help in our spiritual life. This is for the beginner. So we already discussed to some extent in the last class. So today we are discussing the 45th sutra. The samadhi siddhihi ishvara pranidhanat. So how you reach samadhi level, how you reach this highest perfection in samadhi, by surrendering to God, disobeying. Here, In fact, this idea becomes clear as we proceed further. From this sutra onwards, you'll find that there is a process of studying and going deeper and deeper into the essence of many of these sutras. As you read more and more, as you study and discuss more and more, the previous sutras and their true implications become more and more clear and obvious. So, 46th sutra, Sthira Sukham Asanam, deals with the preparatory stage. That means how to gain the ability to sit quiet, steady, and at the same time, in an effortless manner, while enjoying that particular posture. All these are implied as sthairyam and saukhyam, two words, sthira sukha means they are adjectives. So, you should be able to sit for a long time, steady. And it should be sukha means to be very comfortable. There should be no strain. If there is any strain in the posture that you assume while sitting for spiritual practice, that strain will, like the body telling you, look here, I am here. The purpose of the whole yoga practice is to go beyond the body consciousness. You are living in this body, but still the body is not complaining against you. If you have any strain, suppose, as I said earlier, people sometimes try to sit straight with a great effort, nervous, sometimes bulging muscles. It's great effort. So that is the opposite of the second word, sukha, means you should not feel any kind of discomfort or strain. It is called ayatna lalita, it means effortlessness. In fact, effortlessness is one sign of mastery of anything. If you work hard every day and write books and feel great strain, nobody will consider that book worth reading. Some of the greatest classics were written by great authors without any effort, because is it as if nature itself used those great teachers, great writers, as its tools in its hands to convey great wisdom. So, the greatest poets and greatest classical writers were those who wrote, you know, Dostoevsky. Actually, he was half crazy, fully drunk, with a bunch of papers in his hands, and went on writing, and he wrote the greatest novel the world has seen, that is Brothers of Karamazov. So it happens in many cases. So I'm just giving an example, an extended meaning to make you understand this. So sthira sukham asanam. Asana means posture. So it should be steady. But it should be completely free from any effort, any strain, any fatigue. You should be naturally able to sit steady and straight. Then only it becomes comfortable. So saukhya means one should be able to sit and enjoy, feel comfortable while sitting in that particular posture. Because if there is strain, then the body will drag our mind to its level. The purpose is to go beyond body. So, and also it is also the state of the most comfortable experience of restfulness. A person who can sit straight, steady, and for a long time in a comfortable way, he feels rested. He feels great restfulness within. So this idea becomes clear as we proceed to the next verse. So, prayatna shaithilya ananta samapatti bhyam. This is a sutra, but there is one word left out, which is called in Sanskrit Vakyasesha. So Vyasa will fill up that sutra. Bhavati, that's the meaning. Bhavati means, the meaning is this. by complete relaxation of effort, a strain, or by attaining oneness, identity with the infinite in meditation. This asana is attained. This is the meaning of the sutra. The sutra, if you read the literal form, it may not give the complete idea that is really given in the commentaries. So the sutra is this: Prayatna Shaithilya Ananda Samapati Bhyam. This is the only printed version. There is one word left out: Bhavati. Iti Vakyasheshaka. So that mechanism is called Vakyashesha in Sanskrit, philosophical sutras, aphorisms. So there will be many aphorisms. So it is as understood. You have to fill the gap. So how to know? You have to record the commentary. The commentaries are being written by teachers who studied this as a teacher-student tradition. It's called parampara, right from Patanjali's times onwards. So they have filled the gap. It means prayatna shaithilya shaithilya ananda samapati bhyam bhavati iti vakyasheshaka. This is the meaning here. So but the meaning is this. So one important point is this. There should complete absence of any effort. This is one point. That's why yatna uparama siddhyati asanam, according to Vyasa's commentary. How do you attain this posture? So 46th and 47th sutra should be studied together. The 46th sutra says sthira sukham asanam, posture. Posture doesn't mean hatha yoga posture. So I must tell you in this context, some of you may be disappointed. Asana and pranayama, as mentioned in the Patanjali system, are slightly different from what they mean in the yoga studios. That should be kept in mind very clearly. Pranayama, as explained by Patanjali, is different from, of course, not unrelated, but it is much more than what pranayama means in the Hatha Yoga tradition. So also asana. The whole gamut of different physical postures, which are known as asanas, are meant to help us in acquiring this kind of enjoyable experience of sitting for a long time with perfect comfort, with a sense of complete restfulness and effortlessness for a long time, so that we'll be able to practice pranayama and meditation, dharana, etc. So all these asanas are only helpful physical exercises which should help us to sit in this posture for a long time. So body should not complain or remind us of its existence. If you have a stomach problem, the body tells you, well, I'm here. The headache, then also that is one way of body is reminding you of its existence, identity or individuality. So body should not be able to remind you of its own existence while sitting for pranayama, meditation, and dharana, etc. That's why it is called it's an effortless posture. This effortlessness is attained by prayatna shaithilyam, means complete absence of any effort. The body becomes so naturally attuned, trained, that it will be able to sit straight for a long time and do pranayama without any feeling of discomfort. So, that's why yatna uparama siddhyati asanam. Now, what do you mean by attaining steadiness? So, Vyasa says yatna uparama siddhyati asanam. Means, literally it means shaking of the limbs comes to an end. That's one thing. Bodily distraction also completely stops. So body reaches a level of uprightness, I mean sitting straight, perfect relaxation and effortlessness. And this is possible through what Patanjali calls prayatna shaithilyam, means total effortlessness. So you find, of course, the commentator will tell you, your body shakes when you sit for meditation. Mostly it is due to the mind wandering about. When we are not able to fix the mind on a single ideal, so the sutra says fixing on the infinite, that is called, you know, fixing on the infinite, ananda samapatti bhyam, it is called. So ananda means infinite. That's why frequently many yoga teachers will guide their students to meditate on, to think of the infinite, the sky. Or as the case may be, you know, ananda is also the name, the mythological concept of a huge snake or Sankarsana or ananta is holding the entire cosmos on his hood. It's huge. This is a mythological story. If it, and it, it's not a big strain for it. It is so huge, so strong, the entire cosmos is borne by it on its hood in a very effortless manner. So that is the, that is one way of reading the whole sutra for, according to some other commentators. So one way to fix the mind and keep it steady and thereby keeping the body also steady, because when the mind is steady, body also remains steady, is to think, to fix the mind on the infinite. The infinite doesn't shake because it has nowhere to shake. It is the entire cosmos. So you can shake only if you get to swim in one swing in one direction and another direction. Because you encompass the entire creation, then where do you shake? How do you shake? So one way of reaching this level of steadiness is to concentrate on the infinite, which is called, you know, ananda samapatti. And also complete freedom from any kind of effort. So that is 47th sutra. 48th one is tato dunda anabhigataka, means tataha here means when you reach that level of perfect steadiness, perfect effortless way of sitting for a long time in a very restful posture where you almost transcend yourself, the body consciousness, and also the consciousness of the intellect and mind. And then the body becomes steady. And then what happens? Dunda anabhigata means siddhoshnadivi duntehi asana jayatna abhibhuyati, means that we won't be affected by cold or heat, good or bad, hunger or thirst. Means the mind will be completely above the dvandas, means the opposites. Frequently the mind goes in one direction or another direction. It is like a pendulum. Mind doesn't remain steady. There's sankalpa and vikalpa. One mind has one way to think in one direction and its opposite way, it moves in the opposite direction, like cold and heat, hunger and thirst, good and bad, all these opposites. In fact, the reason why the body gets disturbed and so also concentration gets disturbed is just the mind is affected by the heat or the cold of the room, or hunger or thirst of the body, or any such things. So when you reach this level of what is called asana siddhi, or steadiness of posture, one will be able to go beyond the opposites of mental thought currents. Now we are going to discuss the most important topic. Tasmin sati swasa prashwasayoh gati vichedah pranayama. So pranayama is discussed here. Now, as I mentioned earlier, there is a little difference between what pranayama means in the Hatha Yoga tradition, the physical culture known as yoga or Hatha Yoga tradition, where pranayama, breathing exercises are taught, and also what it means in the yoga tradition. In Hatha Yoga, for example, inhaling, exhaling, and also suspension of breath, all these together, the whole process is called pranayama, which is called breathing exercises. In fact, prana does not really mean this breath alone. Breath is a gross dimension of prana. Prana in Vedanta and also in yoga means cosmic energy. The cosmic energy operates in our body through the lungs in the form of this breath. So the breath is the grossest dimension of this cosmic energy. So when we try to regulate the breathing process, we'll be able to regulate and control to some extent the higher dimension of this breath, which is called prana, which is prana. Energy. So that should be understood very, very clearly. In Patanjali system, pranayama means cessation of the movement of breath after inhalation. So you inhale and then do not expel the air. There is complete cessation of the movement of the breath. So it is retained within. That is pranayama. So also, suspension of breath after exhalation or expulsion. It is called antakumbhaka and bahikumbhaka. Kumbhaka means the retention of the breath is what pranayama means in Patanjali system. Rejaga and puraga means inhalation and exhalation are only helpful tools to achieve this level. If one doesn't practice inhalation and exhalation properly if the person tries to practice retention, it could create problems. It could be asthmatic problems. Sometimes it could create, if one practices too much, it could lead to the triple delusion, delusions of grandeur, delusions of persecution, and delusions of reference. All this can be affected. Some schizophrenic problems also can, or asthma, which is very common. The other one, of course, could happen to people with some historical problems. It could aggravate a possible problem. So we'll discuss this subject now. So the sutra is this, tasmin sati. Tasmin sati means, this is sati sapta means Sanskrit grammar, it's called, means when you reach that level of posture, perfection in posture, it's called asana. So that is very important. One should never practice pranayama in sitting in an easy chair unless you want to face problems. Breathing exercise without physically blocking the inhalation, exhalation may not be harmful. But regular pranayama, as we understand today, where the nostrils are released and blocked alternatively, should not be practiced in any posture other than perfectly steady, upright posture. So that is an important point. That's why it is tasmin sati. So Patanjali makes it very clear. When you reach the perfection in that posture, asana. So when you reach that level of perfection in asana, asana here means sthira sukham asana, means one should be able to sit steady and comfortably in an upright posture for a long time. When you reach that level, shwasa prashwasa yoho gati vichedaha. So gati vicheda means suspension of movement. Gati means movement. Vicheda means suspension. So when a person reaches a very high level of perfection in physical posture, which also involves to a great extent fixing the mind, that should be understood very clearly. Perfect steady posture as defined by Patanjali cannot be attained unless one has reached a level of mind control and concentration of the mind, which again cannot be achieved without going through the first 10 fundamental disciplines, yamas and niyamas. Yamas are very important, and niyamas are also very important, but they're auxiliaries, fundamental 5 disciplines, ahimsa, satya, asteya, brahmacharya, parigraha. If one is fully established in these 5 disciplines, then the 5 niyamas like tapasandosha, sauja, swadhyaya, ishapridhana, etc. When you reach these 10 disciplines and reach high level of perfection, these 10 disciplines, you'll be able to sit naturally, steady, upright, and comfortable for a long time. It's called asanam. When you reach perfection in that asanam, physical posture, which again, as I mentioned, involves a lot of steadiness of mind, etc., then what happens? Shwasa prashwasa yoho gati vichedaha. So shwasa means inhaling. It's called puraga in the ordinary language. Prashwasa means exhaling. You release the air, which is called rejaka. Kumbhaga means stopping. So the gati vicheda. So kumbhaga is the real meaning of pranayama according to Patanjali. But kumbhaga naturally includes mastery of puraga and rejaka. Without practicing puraga and rejaka properly, one will not be able to master kumbhaga. So you can, sometimes you will have kumbhaga. Suppose you see you get a news, you have got $1 billion. Suddenly you have gained some kind of lottery or something. For one split second you may exclaim. That is kind of kumbhaga actually. But that kumbhaga is not a yogi kumbhaga. Suddenly you get a shocking experience, visual or audio. That also can be kumbhaga. Means cessation of the movement of the breath is kumbhaga. But that kumbhaga won't make you a yogi. But from a purely physical, empirical point of view, it also means cessation of the movement of the breath. But real kumbhaga is possible only if one masters puraga and rejaka, means inhaling and exhaling. So shwasa is inhaling, puraga. Prashwasa means exhaling, that is rejaka, which is to be done in a regulated, proportionate, measured manner. And after mastering that, one will be able to completely suspend the movement of breath after expulsion, which is called antakumbhaka, or after inhalation, which is called bahikumbhaka. Sorry, that should be understood very clearly. When you inhale and suspend the movement of the breath is within, is called antakumbhaka. When you exhale and then you suspend the movement of breath, it is called bahikumbhaka, means after expulsion. So that should be understood. Bahi means external, anta means internal. When you breathe, when you suspend the movement of breath after filling the body with prana, that is, after inhaling, it is called antakumbhaga. When you suspend the movement of breath after expelling the air, after exhalation, without inhalation, I mean, you don't inhale, the whole breath is pushed out, then it's called Bahikumbha. So this is made very, very clear in Patanjali's system. Now, according to Buddhist tradition, this practice was supposed to be a prelude to meditative process, which leads you to samadhi. So one should remember, you know, in fact, many of the great commentators on Patanjali's system, at least some of them, were Buddhists. So there was a school of Buddhism. One of the two idealistic schools of Buddhism was Yogacara system or Vijnanavada. It's called subjective idealism. The other one was Shunyavada or doctrine of emptiness. So to make it very clear, you know, the entire Buddhist Pali canonical literature is divided into three categories. Each is called a pidaga, means a basket. Tripidaga means called. So Sutta Pidaga, Vinaya Pidaga, Abhidhamma Pidaga. These are the three schools of the original Pali canonical literature. Because after Buddha's passing away, maybe in 543 BC, there was a Buddhist council in which about 500 Buddhist bhikshus and bhikshunis, nuns and monks, gathered, and they recited Buddha's teachings. Buddha mostly spoke in Prakrit language, the language of the masses. So the script was Pali. So these great monks and nuns, they recited from their memory, they recollected the teachings of the Buddha, which they recorded in three fundamental canons, which are called the Tripitakas: Sutta Pitaka, Vinaya Pitaka, Abhidhamma Pitaka. Of which Sutta Pitaka contained the most important and most one of the most well-known of Buddhist canonical literature in Pali. It's called Dhammapada. So Dhammapada says, for example, Yasya Chedam Samuchinnam Moola Gacham Samuhadam Savediva Varithim Samadhim Adhigachati. It is Sanskrit. This is Pali, Sanskrit. Yasya Tat Samuchinnam Moola Ghadam Samudhadam Savaidiva Ratrova Samadhim Adhigachati. So this is what Buddha taught. A great spiritual seeker in whom all unworthy feelings, thought currents, are completely removed or absent, alone reaches inner peace. So as a prelude, as a preliminary practice for attaining this mental peace and steadiness of the mind, many of the early Buddhist teachers also recommended these yogic practices. So now, of course, I think we have still more time, but now, a few more important principles which are normally mentioned in the Buddhist scripture, that is this. Of course, some of the books, not necessarily classical commentaries like Vyasa Bhashya or Maniprabha or Tattva Vaisharidhi or Yoga Vartika, not these Sanskrit books, some of the later works written in English or regional language in India, mostly 19th century and 20th century, by great teachers of yoga who were incidentally responsible for the revival of yoga in its practical aspect, yoga asana, etc. They have made some great contribution to the understanding of yoga system in modern times, because some of them were well-educated doctors like Swami Sivananda, who was the founder of Divine Life Society, was himself a great medical practitioner. Was an outstanding yogi who wrote books on Rajayoga and also on Pada Yogasana, you know, the Gheranda Samhita, Shiva Samhita, and you know, Hatha Yoga Pradipika. Based on these books, they wrote their books on yoga. So one important point is this. In all these practices, Ashtanga Yoga practices, which we are going through right now, there is always a natural, effortless sequence. Nothing forced, nothing in the form of, in the form of over-asceticism. Because over-asceticism, no less than its opposite, too much of worldliness, will lead to disturbance. So there is always a very scientific and rational and smooth flow, a sequence of practices. If we don't follow that regimen, that strict discipline, it could lead to mental and physical problems, either in the form of different forms of insanity or different forms of breath disorder, asthma and so on. So, they have made it very clear, because taking into consideration the compulsions and demands of our time, they make it very clear that unless we follow this discipline in a very systematic, regulated manner, there is always the possibility of leading to obsession. It could be different types. For example, people who practice a lot of yogasana, a lot of pranayama, without the guidance of the master, without practicing some degree of moderation, they become obsessed with certain ideas. It's kind of extent of obsession. Obsession. It's a psychiatric problem, of course. It's a strong feelings of obsession. Or it could be the cause of some serious physical ailments or mental ailments. Now, to emphasize the point, which of course traditional commentators did not do, they have emphasized the importance of yama and niyama before taking up elaborate yogic postures or elaborate breathing exercises. To give an illustration, if anybody practices a lot of yogasanas and also pranayama, not pranayama as Patanjali means, but pranayama as meant by the Hatha Yoga teachers like Gheranda Samhita and Hatha Yoga Pradipika, all these books. According to them, pranayama means the whole process of Puraga, Rejaga and Kumbhaka, exhalation, inhalation and also retention. But according to Patanjali and Vyasa, the commentator, pranayama means only Antakumbhaka and Bhagakumbhaka, means after inhaling you suspend the movement of breath, it is called Antakumbhaka, or after exhaling you suspend the movement of breath, it is called Bhagakumbhaka, means external internal Kumbhaka. So that difference should be kept in mind. But at the same time, this cannot be really attained, properly mastered, without going through training in through this process of Puraga and Rejaga, means exhalation and inhalation, in a very regulated, proper and measured manner, if possible, under a teacher. To give an example, as I mentioned earlier, now suppose a person practices all these without caring for any of these traditional disciplines. A person with a violent tendency, strong, very prone to violent thoughts, violent tendencies. If that person practices vigorous asanas and pranayama, these violent tendencies will be aggravated. Because whatever may be our tendency, will have a tendency to get, whatever may be our character or our personality, will have a tendency to get aggravated when we practice all this, because these practices create surplus energy and heat. So the nervous system gets energized. As a result, you feel more vigor, you feel more energy and enthusiasm. So if a person with a strong violent nature becomes very energetic, you can imagine the consequences. So also, people who are very greedy for money, I mean those who don't practice asteya or abarigraha, those who want things that belong to others, if they practice all these disciplines, then those unpleasant characteristics will become aggravated. The person who doesn't have sense control, brahmacharya, he may become a profligate. Person who doesn't practice asteya may become a master thief. Or a person who doesn't practice ahimsa may become a violent. All these things could happen. It may not happen in a social scale, but that in the individual's personality will be terribly affected. That's what happens. His attitudes and personality will be terribly affected. And again, of course, there is one thing. If one doesn't master the yamas and niyamas, especially yamas, one will not be able to master asana, of course. Because when you try to sit steady and comfortable for a long time, you find a lot of disturbances, problems. You may force yourself to sit for some time. Maybe a few days one may try. But gradually, this yoga posture itself becomes a torture. So posture ceases to be posture and becomes a torture for himself. So if one wants to practice asana, the first thing to understand that is that it should be a very pleasant, comfortable and effortless experience that we should be able to enjoy in a very spiritual sense. One should be able to sit for a long time in a state of complete restfulness. So that's why Patanjali himself indicates prayatna shaithilyam. So he uses only one word. Relaxation of effort. That's the meaning of prayatna shaithilyam. Which has got deep implications. One should be able to sit, but he should not feel even the presence of the body. His mind will transcend body consciousness. Because you are reminded of your body, as I said earlier, only when there is a problem with the body. If an ant bites you, and if you are aware of it, then you have not acquired asana, to be very frank. Because suddenly the body feels the pain, it drags the mind towards itself. And once we reach that level, then shwasa prashwasa yoga gati vicheda pranayama. That with us means sati. When you reach that level of perfection in the posture, then regulation of breath can be practiced, which culminates in total and complete suspension of the movement of breath. And this pranayama, in which we are actually operating at the level of breath, is only a prelude to the higher pranayama, because prana means energy, and breath is only one dimension of the energy which operates in the body of ours. So we'll discuss the next sutras in the next class. Now we have interaction, so let's discuss. Normally we'll have an active discussion.
So Swami, you emphasize the effortlessness, but of course, I mean, coming as a person growing up in the West, we certainly think of any attainment as been very much effort dependent. So
yeah.
There is this contradiction, effortlessness and effort.
Yes, reaching a level of effortlessness is reaching a level of mastery. He's a great musician. For him, music, singing, is not a great effort. It's a matter of joy. It comes naturally to him. So naturalness, the naturalness in it called. In fact, if something is if you are a genius, is a perfect master, then you should not be doing your work with great strain and effort. And all. That means you are still learning. If you reach a higher level of perfection, mastery, then you'd be able to do that with some degree of total effortlessness. It comes naturally. So naturalness is itself is a kind of effortlessness, in fact. Here we are not dealing with anything at the physical level. Through practice of yogic postures, one would be able to acquire proficiency to sit with natural effortlessness. Even sitting straight itself, because the Sushumna Nadi, you know, the system will not permit you. Give an example. Suppose you are sitting and you fix your mind on an idea, you'll be able to sit. But suppose your mind moves away from that focus, then body shakes. So you can see that we can see what Patanjali means here. So he says, Prayatna Shaithilyas Ananda Samapatibhyam. Suppose you just concentrate on anything that is of an infinite dimension. Of course, frequently it's called sky is the example given by Swamiji, gives the example of sky. It's a very wonderful example. You meditate on the sky. The sky, you can't think of sky shaking. It is infinite, immeasurable. Anything which shakes, to be able to shake, there should be a gap on your left side and right side. The sky is omnipresent. It is all-pervading. It cannot shake. So once you try to fix your mind on anything which is infinite, or even on a great spiritual idea or a mantra or a great spiritual personality, you'll find you are able to sit straight. Because when the mind is fixed on that ideal, then your focus is lifted away from the body. It is lifted to the mind, because in your mind you visualize that thing, that object which you focus on. So the consciousness is lifted away from the body level. So you are able to sit. If you are at the bodily level, you will not be able to sit for a long time. I see muscular people, bulging muscles, trying to sit straight for a long time. But mostly after some time, they will be tired. Then suddenly they come down, or they become tired. So there is steadiness for a short time. There is no saukhya and a sthira sukhamasana. Two words are. The sthira means for a long time in a steady posture, where you should be comfortable, effortless. And one will not be able to sit for a long time unless it is a very comfortable posture for you. You won't be able to sit for a very long time unless it is a very comfortable posture. Maybe the world wrestling champions won't be able to sit for more than half an hour in that steady posture, because this system back will be defective. So muscular strength won't be enough. Muscular strength alone is not enough. So everything takes place at the mental level. If the mind is focused on that, body is steady. When the mental focus is shifted, then body also shakes or moves in one direction or other direction, another direction. This is one thing. But at the same time, prayer can be done in any posture. That is an important point to remember. This is specially meant for pranayama and meditation and all that. For great spiritual personalities, they can meditate even when they are sitting, relaxing on an easy chair. For pranayama, it is dangerous to practice pranayama, puraga and dejaga, if your posture is not steady, unless you want to fall sick. That's an important thing. Physically, it is harmful and injurious. That's why, you know, Patanjali is so scientific. After defining asana, posture, he says, prayatna saithilyat ananda samapatibhyam. How to attain this level of perfection in posture? Only through two means. Only prayatna saithilyam means total effortlessness. And how to do that? Ananda samapati means you try to mentally communicate yourself with the infinite by focusing on the infinite. Once you focus on the infinite, the mental focus is lifted away from the body, then body won't complain if you're sitting in a steady posture. Anyone who is at the bodily level will not be able to sit for a very long time because it will be totally uncomfortable. That's it. That's why it's an interesting point. Okay. Doctor, you know.
I was hoping you could describe, you said maybe the tendency to violence in the brain, if not conquered, when you practice asana and pranayama,
yeah,
will get exacerbated.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I was hoping you would explain more why.
Okay, I will explain. Now, the point is, you know, physical postures, I'm talking about yogasanas, you know, and also pranayama is normally taught in yoga studios, are very helpful if you practice in a very moderate way, not for a long time. It may be helpful. In fact, it's true. Yogic therapy is built upon that principle. Here we are discussing about these practices at a much more intense way, as a tool, as a means to reach samadhi level. So at that level, for example, if a person has a tendency for violence, and if he practices yogic postures, which involve reversing the body, it means a lot of blood is flown into the brains, nadis called veins, and they get activated. Normally, many of the nervous centers of the body are not very active. Some of them are active, some of them are not. Many of them may get hyperactivated if a lot of blood is flown into them, or if you do pranayama, which also pranayama causes the breath energy to flow into all these nervous centers. Some of the, it's not good for you to awaken the demon hiding in those nervous centers unless you have mastered ahimsa, because the practice of ahimsa or non-violence closes the doors through which the blood, through which the nervous energy flow in the opposite direction. So when you practice, when you get yourself established in the practice of ahimsa, you close those doors. It's called himsa dwara. Himsa dwara means the doors with enters towards violent tendencies. You close that, those doors when you practice non-violence or ahimsa. If you don't do that and you still practice a lot of pranayama, which may cause the awakening or hyperactivation of the nervous system, then it could be dangerous. That's what is meant. And it could also result in certain kinds of aberrations of ideas. Aberrations of ideas. If I don't want to mention in a more explicit manner, but many of the teachers who may have given some kind of perverted interpretations of Vedanta and Yoga might have this background. If you read Patanjali system and the commentaries, the picture becomes clear, but we normally don't speak so often. Okay. Perversion is a big, real possibility. Perversion. And it's much more dangerous also. So if a person practices under, without any guidance of a teacher or a master, and without any discipline. There are great men and women who have inherited, who are born with these great disciplines which may have practiced in previous life. For them, there is no problem. But again, so we had to consider the previous life. They may have done a lot of sadhanas, a lot of practices they may have done and perfected themselves to a higher level. So for them there is no problem. For others it's not. Anything?
So, Swami, you mentioned the yoga practices, I mean the Patanjali Yoga Sutras, in the practice of the postures and pranayama are associated with the infinite. So, but the Patanjali system precedes Advaita, which is really emphasizes the infinite nature of the reality in the end.
Patanjali system does not precede Advaita. Advaita as a complete systematic metaphysical system, the systematization of Advaita as a very compact metaphysical system was the work of Shankaracharya, who belongs to 8th century AD. But Advaitic ideas and Advaita system are discussed in so many books, not only in the Upanishads and Vedas, which are much more or much older than Patanjali. So, in fact, for Patanjali also, Vedas is a pramana. Veda is one of the authentic sources of epistemological validity. So Patanjali also considers Vedas, that is Shabda Pramana, means verbal testimony, and direct perception and inference as the epistemological sources. So Patanjali system is also in a way based on Vedas. And Vedas and Upanishads contain the original sources of Advaita and Advaitic system. So that should be kept in mind. Patanjali himself was neither an Advaiti nor a non-Advaiti. He's not concerned with that. His main focus is something else. And the great Advaita teacher Shankaracharya himself has admitted the Patanjali system is a great help to reach a very high level of fitness, mental purity for Advaitic practice. So they are complementary. So the concept of sky is not mentioned by Patanjali. It is mentioned in some commentaries. In modern times, Swamiji, who gave an example, see, Swamiji was expounding this Yoga Sutras in the West. So he spoke and interpreted in a language, in a manner that would be intelligible to modern educated Westerners. So he used the word. You can find in Swamiji's commentary, sky, he says. It's true, that's a symbol of the infinite, the transcendental. This idea. So thank you. So we will continue the discussion in the next class, next Friday. Same. Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Tat Sat Sri Ramakrishna Parmahamsa.